to the end of the week here, and I've got a gem for you this evening. It is a beautiful moon outside. Whether you're in the desert, seeing it from a beach, here in Arkansas through the woods, the moon looks beautiful. I've been waiting on this moon. All this cloudy weather and stuff. I am jealous of those that are seeing it from a desert night or a wide open sky, or happens to have it bouncing off the beach, being able to look at it that way. It's been a long time since I've seen the moon like that, but I will again. Doesn't look bad here in Arkansas though. But if you do happen to gander at the moon quite a bit, then you belong on this show. You belong listening here. And it's been a great weekend, you know. We've had really good guests this week. Awesome guests. And tonight is no different. And now when I look up guests, I scan and I look for the Trump card. Hate to use that vernacular, but I think I have one tonight. Tonight our guest is Andrew Vidic, PhD. He has a PhD in religious study. I probably butchered that, but we could let him talk about that. He has a new book out called Love is a Secret, and it's the mystic quest for divine love. This is a wonderful mystic. He's been practicing spirituality and learning the traditions for 45 years. And when I tell you that this is the guest I've been looking for, I don't mean anything against any of the other guests. All of the guests have been awesome. But on a personal level for me, some of the stuff that he speaks about and then he teaches is quite fascinating. And a little bit about Andrew. He studies the psychology of mystical experiences, and he speaks about the psychology of mystical experiences. Over the last 5,000 years, inspired leaders and saints of all the great spiritual traditions have produced a rich collection of writings describing the transcendent states they have experienced. A new edition of a book by Andrew Vidic called Love is a Secret describes these states, exploring the poetry, prose, and sacred art they have used to illuminate their experiences. Vidic illustrates how strikingly similar experiences occur to mystics of every spiritual tradition. That's the synchronicity, folks. That's what I've been talking about. Drawing from all the great traditions, from Taoism to Christianity, from Sufism to Judaism, it articulates the psychology of humankind's deepest spiritual encounters. Vidic, a former professor at Manhattan College, identifies 10 distinct psychological states common to all religious experience. A study of the specific characteristics of each state reveals that sages from widely different theologies, times, and cultures have experienced transcendent love in remarkably similar ways. Their words show us that what intimate encounters with the great beloved feel like and how we can cultivate these mystical unions in our own lives. He provides guidelines on how to identify these mystical experiences and the effects that a love affair, what he calls a love affair with the divine, can have on the life of the seeker. He stresses that these states are accessible to everyone through writings and art and the art of mystics, and believes that extraordinary experiences are now accessible to ordinary people in contemporary society. The compassionate wisdom in the pages of this book, which has been completely updated in the form of a 25th anniversary edition, provides a moving testament to the majesty, variety, and splendor of the direct experience of the mystical union. And I got a copy of it, and it's a gem. Go get this book, folks. And some of you fellows out there and ladies who I've spoken to about what I'm seeking, know when you get this book, this is one of the books I'm talking about. And I hope I didn't slaughter anything about the PhD or his education. There's quite a lot of content on the web about him, and it's gem after gem. And what he talks about in the initiation, well, what an initiate is, I'll tell you what, I'll let him speak about that. What is You hear that a lot, Andrew. What initiation truly is? What is that?
This typically has been called rebirth or second birth or spiritual birth in all the different traditions. For example, in Christianity, when Jesus says to Nicodemus, he says, "You must be reborn." Nicodemus replies, "But how can I enter into the womb of the mother again?" And he says, Jesus replies, "Spirit is born of spirit and flesh of flesh." And so this is a spiritual rebirth. And by definition, it is an out-of-body experience in which we connect with this divine radiant light and music that is within us, which is an expression of God's essential essence. And this is pretty much true of every spiritual tradition. It's known by different names. For example, in Sufism, it's called Bayat.
Mm-hmm.
In Hinduism, it's called Diksha. In Sikhism, it's called Namdan. It's been called, essentially, Bar Mitzvah would have been the same thing in mystical Judaism. So it's nothing new. It's been written about. It's just not very well understood.
Okay. All right. Now, when did, I guess what am I trying to say? When did you first know as a child? Because I like to know, and I don't know if you remember much of it, but as you were growing up, when did you know that this dogma, or let's just say scripture, because dogma may be a brash word for it, that there was something more to it?
Well, when I was young, I was seeking, even from the age of about 12, and I started to have some what might be termed mystical experiences myself, and I started to peruse and look for answers in the world's sacred scripture. And, of course, the scriptures do contain these pearls of explanation. But the challenge that the ordinary seeker finds is that they are hidden and are hard to find amongst the morass of verbiage and storytelling and so on and so forth. So it's not always easy to locate the pearl within the mass of scripture. But if one perseveres, I think one will eventually, I think, be led and guided to a source in which those truths can be more fully explained. And we call that a spiritual teacher, a spiritual master. As it's said in the many traditions, when the disciple is ready, the master appears. And that can be both physically as well as internally, spiritually.
Okay. When you say persevere, could you, like, you know, tell us what persevere means? Because some of us means, well, persevere means that I meditate all day. Or so you hear some say, well, all you need is, you know, a sentence of salvation. Or another person says, well, no, it's your works in the world. When you say persevere, what does it take to persevere in your experience?
Well, what a seeker should be after is truth. And so long as we are seeking truth with zeal and passion, with sincerity, and with an honest longing, then that will lead us in the direction of the mystical automatically, which includes, of course, meditation and prayer and selfless acts as well. But the key thing here is that the seeker should never give up. He should continue seeking until he reaches that stage where he's connected within to that divine power of light and sound. And that is really what the whole journey is about. So persevering means never giving up. It means seeking truth wherever that road may take them. But most of all, it means persevering in finding a source of guidance in which one can trust and where the power of God is working.
Okay. So it's just, you know, if you're on a path of a seeker, you just, you never give up. And I got to tell you, from my own experience and the ways that I do it, I'm like, this is an avenue for me, because I feel like I can learn from people, you know, other than just myself. And that's why I do this. But do you find that for a seeker, that life gets a little daunting more than it would be if you just gave up and said, okay, I'm just going to do the material thing and not worry about all this other stuff? Because, well, you know, no one's ever going to know anyway, so who cares, right? We can't do anything about it. You know, you get that answer a lot, you know, and it does seem like the more you dig in and try to find out truth, life starts getting hard sometimes. Did you ever experience that?
Sure. I think that the easy path is just to become absorbed in the passing phenomena of life, the entanglements that ordinary people go through. Easy because you're going to go in that direction anyways. That's what everybody is doing. To reverse and to go in a direction where we really seek what is real, permanent, and what is true is going to require moving against the tide of what most humanity is doing. And so there are times when things get difficult. Different traditions talk about the dark night of the soul. As the soul pulls away from its attachments to the things of this world, while at the same time is not fully connected within, experiences a kind of a dark night in which it's neither in the light nor actually in the world. It's in a limbo land, and that experience is also part of every seeker's journey.
Oh, man.
And cannot be avoided.
That is a good way of explaining it, because it, you know, when I go to my day job, which, by the way, drives me nuts, right? But I know I got to do it, you know. It, my mind and my soul, and look, I probably work, I can't talk about it, but I probably work in one of the best places in this state, and still yet, I don't feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing as far as, I don't, it's hard to explain. Now, I've experienced where I've left the world for a time, and my life just, pardon my French, went to hell in a handbasket because I had nothing coming in, you know, so... Is that part of the struggle that, I mean, maybe it's my struggle, but is that part of it, is finding that balance?
Well, definitely we have to live in the world. The critical thing is not to be of the world. So we all have to make a living. We have to support ourselves. And this is not in any way contrary to living a life of spirit. But we have to integrate our values into whatever we do. So in most mystical traditions, you could summarize this as calling it positive mysticism, in which we bring our values and engage our values in the place in which we live and work. So no matter what we are doing, we are integrating those values and our lifestyle into whatever we're doing. So which, as opposed to running away from the world, our obligations, our families, our commitments, and so on and so forth, which can be actually counterproductive. And the reason it can be counterproductive, if we do it on a permanent basis as opposed to short term, is that it can reinforce certain selfish tendencies in us. So the answer is, yes, we can live in the world, but live in a detached fashion and bring our light into the world so that it can help other people as well. But to do that, we got to be grounded ourselves. We have to be fully committed and fully grounded in that experience so that we are not affected by the world. So long as we're affected by the world, we can't be the vehicle of transformation for ourselves or others.
Okay. And, you know, kind of walk me through this as a kid when you first when you first moved into, you know, you don't have to tell me every little detail, but I'm fascinated in these stories, you know, the path that you took that led you there. Did it go from, you know, church, to a mystical order, or to books, and then led to a different education? Or how did that go for you?
Okay, so what happened was that at an early age, I started having some experiences, but which one might call mystical experience. And I was in a family of very religious mother. My father was not religious at all, but my mother was a daughter of a minister. And so there was a strong spirituality in her as well, very strong spirituality, as well as a religious background. So she cultivated certain basic values in me. But my search began very strongly around 16 or 17, and I started reading every book that I could get my hands on. And as I read more and more and more, I came to the irrevocable conclusion that all traditions really not only recommended, but insisted on the need for a spiritual guide or master in order to really make headway spiritually. And so the next step in my journey was to find a competent spiritual master who could guide me inwardly. And I was just entering college at that time, and I decided to drop out of college and see if I could go to India in order to find a spiritual master who I thought could guide me. And just at about that time, after I had dropped out of school, I ran into some literature that pointed me in the direction of a spiritual teacher that I later came to meet physically in 1972. So intense study of the scripture basically led me to the conclusion of the need of a spiritual master, and my intense search led me to the feet of this spiritual teacher. However, the reality is that although it appears that I was the seeker, in reality I was the sought. We don't find spiritual masters, they find us, any more than a sheep that's lost can find the shepherd.
Wow.
So it is the spiritual masters themselves pull us to their feet unbeknownst to ourselves, even though we appear to be making actions in those directions. So at the right time, at the right place, and under the right circumstances, we are guided to the source of wisdom, where we will be guided further, both inwardly and outwardly. So at that point, I met my spiritual master. I took initiation on the, that was the beginning of the of my life as a disciple.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, there's a book, Secret, not Teachings of All Ages, but it's called What the Ancient Wisdom Expects from Its Disciples, right, by Manly P. Hall. And he talks about the spiritual master coming to that person after they've toiled and struggled and everything, and they finally come to him and tell him it's time to start learning. You know, you are my disciple, right? You have not chosen me, I have chosen you, you know? And it, when I heard that for the first time, I mean, it, you ever hear something or read something that just, you know, feels true in your heart and it sends all kinds of vibes through you, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, he's describing actually what happens to every soul. Because the journey up into the meeting of the soul with the master is all spiritual realization or all spiritual seeking eventually leads to the path of initiation. And the initiation is a quantum step forward under the guidance of a competent teacher, a competent master. And it is not us who find them, they find us. And it is through their love that we are able to, and their power and their spiritual training, that we are able to follow in their footsteps and make strides spiritually. But yes, absolutely, that experience of knowing something very, very, very deeply in your gut or intuitively is part of that whole seeking process. You feel that you are not in control, but that there is a power guiding you at every step of the way.
So I would say 45 years of this. This is what you do now. Do you help guide people to find their spiritual masters?
That's what I do. I am a disciple of a spiritual master, and there is a continuous lineage. My role as a disciple is first and foremost to progress as quickly as I can. And in progressing as quickly as I can, to be in the service as much as I can of all those who are seeking, and by giving back the best of what I have received myself. So it is an obligation, as well as a sacred duty, to give back everything that I have received to all those and sundry, and I do so without any charge and without any remuneration. So I'm not... I give talks and lectures and workshops and retreats all over the country and actually all over the world, and I don't take any remuneration for it whatsoever. It's the gift of my masters. How can I take any payment for anything that has been given to me freely?
That's amazing. That is amazing. Wow. You know, I don't know how you do that, honestly. That, I mean, do you find people knocking on your door all the time, trying to beat it down?
I have a lot of commitments in terms of, yes, I do answer a lot of email, and I do have phone conversations with a lot of people, and I give quite a few talks in the thousands. But I think the most important thing to understand is that I'm simply giving back the gifts that I have received. So I am not really the giver. I am the conduit for those who have given to me, and I'm simply passing on those gifts to other people. I don't see myself as being worthy of any of this. Simply an opportunity to give back. We all have an opportunity in whatever way we can to give back to those who come in our sphere of influence. So that's really what my role at this point. I'm a retired teacher, professor, and I've basically earned my own living. I retired on my own earnings. So now with my free time, I'm essentially give out these teachings as much as and as quickly as I can to as many people as I can.
Even this book that's on Amazon that you have, and I highly recommend everybody grab this book. Please, if you're listening to this, please, 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 from the bottom of my heart, grab this book. Because you could have sold this book for 50, 60 bucks easily. For what's in here, these gems that are in here, and you didn't. You made it very affordable for everybody. I mean, I know I'm not trying to put you up on a pedestal, all this stuff, okay? But I am commending you on that, and for you to say that you just help people to help people. You don't really understand how rare that is, maybe to a guy like me, and maybe some of our listeners. You know, I mean.
Now, we do live in a materialistic society, and everything revolves around making money. But,
sure.
You know, part of the journey is to move out of that, and eventually all of us begin to understand that the real spiritual growth comes when you give it all away and expect nothing in return. So, and the blessings that one gets, literally the blissings, the experience of bliss and joy and peace that one gets far outweighs by a million times over any remuneration gives us. So outer remuneration is pretty useless anyways because you can't take it with you. It's not permanent and it's not and does nothing for the soul. Whereas the experience that one gets in being a conduit and being hopefully a good conduit for raising the consciousness of other people to the truths of all great teachers, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it's so. What is it that you believe or know? That what is the role of a spiritual teacher? What is their true and real role?
Well, the real role. Let me just say that there are. When we talk about a competent teacher, we're talking about one who has reached very, very high levels of spiritual perfection, not the kind of ordinary teachers that we see out there all the time, who some of whom are fraudulent, some of whom are just on the way and may be very sincere but have not, you know, traveled very far in the past. But a competent teacher, I define as one who can actually take on the spiritual role of guidance inside and out, and who has himself reached those highest levels of spiritual attainment, synonymous with union with God or satori, enlightenment, liberation, things like that. And so once we reach, are able to be guided by that level, then we are very blessed and we are very lucky and very fortunate, because we come under the care of the, I would call, the unconditional love of God.
It's something that we don't really understand right now. I mean, all we know is conditions, you know.
That's right. Yeah. I think, sadly, many people do not understand how, and have no feeling for the fact that there is tremendous power looking after and guiding every soul. And that power has nothing but unconditional love for each and every soul in creation. And when we look at some of the near-death experiences, we see that during the life review process, souls experience, even while they're going through a life review, this unconditional love and support, no matter what they did in their life, good, bad, or indifferent, from the source, from that source which is nothing but love. So we as souls, because we're separate from God and therefore separate from this experience of love, have forgotten what unconditional love feels, looks like, tastes like. And the only thing we're familiar with is the very judgmental and very restricted sense of that term.
So when I open the Christian Bible, I have a Christian Bible, I've got the Apocrypha, I like the Christian Judaic text, right? But I'm mm-hmm. used to them. And I read the text about judgment and fire and wrath and things like that. You know, you hear people say, well, those are metaphors, right? Can you mm-hmm. speak on that at all? I mean, can you give us
sure.
maybe?
I mean,
go ahead.
When you look at most of the religious literature in the world, most of it has been written for very, very low-level seekers, meaning humanity at its very beginning stages of evolution. And so when we look at, for example, a first grader, you give a first grader a book, it's going to be pretty elementary stuff. And it's going to be boiled down to the level of a first grader can understand, whether it's math or science or history or anything, right? When you look at a 12th grader, you can see all of a sudden there's a vast difference in complexity, sophistication, understanding, right? So most of the scripts of the world are written more or less for the first grader mentality. And that first grader mentality is often depicted spiritually as kind of punishments and rewards, because that's what first graders understand, punishment and reward. The reality is that's not at all what actually the experience of God is like. But it's the only way that a first grader, you know, or a beginning seeker can understand things. And so we tend to relate, those are the storylines that we've been bought into. The minute we go inside and experience this God power, Christ power, Guru power inside ourselves, this light and sound, we know that those descriptions don't hold, that they are actually very inaccurate and not very and off-putting, actually. But they serve a purpose in the beginning stages of our spiritual journey. Later on, we come to understand something very, very, very different. So the reality is that hell or heaven, both of these are non-permanent states. And hell actually is simply the effects of all of our bad actions, thoughts, words, and deeds. And heaven is the same thing, the effects of all of our thoughts, words, and deeds. So the reality is that we are creating our own heaven and hell right here and right now. Whatever we create here is what we get on the other side. And so you don't, it's not really punishment. It's just the effects of our own thoughts, words, and deeds. So certain actions are going to cause you pain. If we hate other people, if we're violent to other people, if we're, those things are going to cause pain. If we're kind and gracious, compassionate, forgiving, those things are going to cause joy and peace. So the bottom line is, God is not punishing anyone. We are our own worst punishment.
Is this what we are, the ones
who are bringing
means?
Suffering upon ourselves, not God.
Well, I read a lot of Gnostic texts, and they talk about the fire within that burns you up. It's kind of like a alchemical thing, you know. And sometimes,
well, that's a different story.
Sure.
The Gnostic, the fire that burns us within, is the purifying fire of God's love. So there's a conundrum there, that in the same way that gold, in order to be purified of all extraneous elements, you have to heat it up to a very high degree.
Mm-hmm.
When you heat it up to a very high degree, all the other extraneous elements other than gold will melt away, but gold will remain. So in the same way, the seeker, this is one way of looking at it, the seeker is experiences a purging of his self from all of these elements of mind and matter and delusion. And it's often referred to as a fire or tapas in the Hindu tradition, as a burning away experience. It has elements of intensity to it, but it is more like a cleansing process than a, I would say, in my own personal experience. And that cleansing process is really a question of cleaning. For example, if you take iron filings and they're surrounded by dirt or filth, and you put a magnet next to them, the magnet will not pull the iron filings because they're encrusted with dirt. But if you take the iron filings, clean the dirt off, the magnet will automatically pull the iron filings. So the soul in its present state is very much like the iron filings encrusted with dirt, which is our attachment and identification with ourselves as body and mind. So as that gradually changes through our own inner mystical experiences, the pull to the source automatically takes over. So where's the pain? Where's the punishment? There's no punishment. It's just a question of letting go.
In your book, it's called, that's the same thing in maybe chapter 5, The Fire of Burning. Is that what you're speaking about there?
Yes, that's part of it. The mystical experience of separation, also called the fire of separation, is, again, a metaphor for this intense purification in which everything other than love is removed. So in the end, as it says in the Bible, God is love. The soul is also made of love, since it is the same essence of God. And therefore, the only way back to the source is also through this experience of love. So whatever is not love is not God and has to be removed from the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so that fire of separation is this intense longing to return to the source of love that the soul experiences. So this can be akin to, you know, on a worldly example would be when we fall in love with someone and we are just so head over heels in love with them that whenever we're not with them, we feel this intense desire to be with them. And that intense desire we feel all the time until we are with them again. So the same way the soul, once having experienced this intense inner ecstasy and love of God, never wants to be separate from that experience again because it knows that's the real reality of its existence.
Wow. Well, I got a verse here that I've been waiting to ask somebody about, because I ask everybody about, and everybody just goes, you know, and maybe you can help me with this, because I've been struggling with it, right? It's in the book of Isaiah 45, right? And I won't read the whole thing, because it takes a lot of time, but the part in here where he says, you know, I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, thou hast not known me. That they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I form the light, and I create darkness. I make peace, and I create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. And it goes on to say, and I missed the part where it says, and I will give thee treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that thou may knowest that I, the Lord, which call thee by name, am the God of Israel. That was before all that. I missed that part. So I kind of understand it, but then I kind of don't, you know. It's pretty...
Well, okay,
I create evil? I mean, I don't know.
This particular quote is really a statement of God's absoluteness, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that there is one God, the creator of everything. That God is both creating, sustaining, and maintaining all creation, and is responsible simultaneously for all beings. And therefore, we are completely dependent upon God for our very essence and very existence. And that we don't understand. We don't understand that we are completely dependent upon that power we call God. For every breath we take. That power exists within us as light. And when that light leaves this body, we say this body is dead. We are not conscious of that power within us at this point, and the whole journey of mysticism is to become conscious of this power of light. Now, I'd have to see the entire quote, but that's just a part of it.
Context for sure.
But. I think you'd have to read it again. I'd have to listen to it again to get it fully, but it's also pointing to the fact that God has the power to reveal that light within us and can do so at his will and pleasure.
So that could be the treasures of darkness and hidden riches and secret places.
Yes, yes. That has the power to reveal the mystical states within us at his will and pleasure, yes.
You know, the Kabbalists talk about that these scriptures actually have five different levels of meaning, you know, just goes deeper and deeper, you know, like treasures of darkness could mean, you know, you could find something that's true in a place you never thought was, or maybe it's in a dark time in your life is where you found, you know, God.
Yep.
Or it could mean a lot of different things, and they're all true. But
that's true.
What boggles me here is the duality. The, you know, when you talk about unconditional love and everything, when I say evil, we all know the types of evil that are in this world. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if I say, okay, did God create that evil Or did he, you know what I mean, right? How,
yeah.
How can I understand God to be an unconditional lover, unlike my parents, if he created a greater evil than my parents could do to me?
Well, I pose the question in a different way. I would say that all what we call evil is simply the absence of good, and that the soul in itself is, by its very nature, filled with love, light, and life. But as it moves away from its source further and further and further and becomes more entangled in mind and matter, it loses the qualities of its source and becomes looking like what we might call evil. And let me put it to you another way.
Or ignorance. Yeah.
Exactly. You can call it ignorance. That actually evil is simply the absence of the state of our natural soul, the experience of the opposite of our state of our natural soul. And that is a result of our own thoughts, words, and deeds, not the action of God. We are given free will. Okay? All scriptures, both East and West, Abrahamic and Vedic, talk about the soul having free will. So it was the soul's own choices that create the pain and suffering that it is experiencing. If the soul had never forgotten God, if the soul had always moved back in the direction of the source, it would never have committed any evil. Evil only arises when we move in the opposite of the direction of our source. And so who is creating evil? Not God. Humans' free will is creating it. And it is our free will that is what has to be exercised. So the whole purpose of creation is that if God actually did not give us free will, then our choice to return to God would have no meaning.
Yeah.
It's only when we consciously decide to return to God ourselves that we realize that it is bringing us great joy and peace and love that we do so.
Yeah, it clearly states in here that, and I create evil, but, you know, somebody wrote that too, right? So, you know.
You have to be careful about the Bible.
Right.
Because much of it has been rewritten and changed and re-edited and changed. There's only two scriptures in the world that are unedited, unchanged. One is the Quran, and the other is the Gurmat Sudan of the Sikh scriptures. All other scriptures have been edited, changed, rewritten, and who knows who really wrote them.
Okay.
So that's reality. That's a historical reality.
So that's interesting. You say the Quran. Do you find it ironic that we have such terroristic organizations that, I mean, look at the laws that they say they have in those books. Are they just misunderstanding the text just like we are in our Western text? Is that what's happening?
There is a tremendous amount of misinterpretation and the use of scripture for political ends. And so as a result, you get this tremendous, I would call the abomination of use of scripture.
Right.
And most of it, the interpretation is simply not there. There are about 11 places in the Quran which speak or use violence. And all of those are misinterpreted by the so-called jihadists for their own political ends.
Isn't that crazy?
The first and most basic quote in the Quran is that religion is not a question of force, and there should be no imposition of religion. And that's in the Quran. So, you know, people choose what they'd like and use it for their own selfish end. What's new in life, right?
Right. But we're killing each other.
The same thing as Christian scriptures. All right, there are places in the Christian tradition that if I were to quote to you, you'd say Jesus couldn't have said that, but he did.
Sure.
He said, I bring the sword, and I will separate husband from wife and wife from children. So what does that mean?
Well, I mean, to me it sounds kind of harsh, but the more I think about it, maybe he's talking about bringing us to understand that we're all a family.
Yeah, well, okay, so that's a good interpretation, but you could see how that quote could be easily interpreted in the wrong way.
Yeah, like when he says, hate your parents and leave everything and follow me.
Exactly.
You know, I used to just bang my head up against the wall, and until I started understanding that it's really, when he says the way, well, I am the way, he's talking about the acts and the things that he did.
Sure.
But, you know, we tend to deify it to a point. But, I mean, again, it's like I said, I'm still figuring all this out. And what you teach is the unfoldment of realization happens in meditation. And a lot of people teach meditation. But I would like to get your belief and thoughts on what real spiritual meditation is.
Well, meditation, very simply put, is simply the ability to still one's mind and leave the physical body and enter into a higher spiritual realm. That's what it's all about. It's not about stress reduction. It's about direct revelation with that power we call God. And that experience of inner light, which all souls have when they go inside. And as that light intensifies, it grows, and we move from one region to another region to another region. Jesus referred to this as well when he said, "My Father's house has many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go there to prepare a place for you." So he is talking about the inner preparation that the Master makes for the disciples who are progressing. So, but all traditions refer to these inner cosmology, meaning the inner spiritual realms. You find it in theosophy and Sufism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, and even Judaism and Christianity.
Yeah, the Kabbalah has it formed out, you know.
Sure, they all have that's where the mystical journey starts. Those experiences within, which are the higher reality, are really what the whole journey is all about. And that's accessed through the process of meditation known by different names and traditions. So they've called it zikr or mashahada in Sufism. It's called hetpatadut or devakut in Judaism or Kabbalah. It's been called dhyana in Hinduism, Buddhism, and so on and so forth.
How do I extract everything that you know, and how do I get that? Is that possible? Do I've got to go 45 years down the road myself, don't I? Do you think that we'd learn this through many lifetimes, or can we do it in one?
It is a process of many lifetimes, but once we come to the path of initiation, we can make tremendous strides in this lifetime. Will we reach the ultimate goal? Maybe not, but there's no reason you have to return. So once a spiritual master takes you under his charge, they begin to liquidate our spiritual debt or karmic debt. So at the time of death, there is no reason to return. We will continue to evolve and never lose consciousness again in the inner spiritual dimension and worlds, which are far more vast as well as far more beautiful than this world.
This is the what they speak about at the everlasting life and the river of life, and some people call it, you know, life in the stars, so to say. Where we can go and come as we please.
That's what it's all about.
That's amazing. You know, I always talk to my buddies about that, and I get, you know, I got a few friends that listen, but I'm like, do you think that that God put these planets and the stars up here just to float around for no reason, you know. Maybe I'll never know what they're there for, but I can tell you the reason for just about everything I see on Earth. But I'm still trying to figure out me and that stuff out there in space. You can't tell me all of this has perfect mathematical reason and the rest of it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So how do we begin? Because I struggle with this. Meditation, you know, I've practiced what's called the fourfold breath, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like an exercise where we gain momentum? I mean, how do we do this? How do we break this barrier and learn to just do this every day?
Well, we need to get the guidance of a competent teacher to begin with, and who can give us the method of ingress, the method of meditation, and teach us. And this can't be done through books. You need to have a spiritual master for this, to really start on the inner way. It is God's law that those doors aren't open until we get guidance, because it's dangerous if we don't have guidance. And so when we connect with that teacher, they open the inner spiritual eye and they give us the method of meditation whereby we can enter into the inner temple, which is within us, and progress from day to day. So it can be done. It can be done in this lifetime, but we need the proper guidance.
Well, there's a lot of us seekers. I mean, I would love to go to India, right? But at the moment, I can't, right? Or maybe, I don't know. Do you understand what I'm asking you here?
Because I do. My response would be, look, I would be happy to pass on to you the connection I have with my own spiritual teacher. You can investigate. You can find out if this is the right teaching for you. But that's a start.
Right.
It's a place to go to continue the journey and to begin to look for some real guidance. So most people I meet, I pass this information on to them, and I offer them the opportunity to be in the presence of a really highly enlightened being, a true spiritual luminary. Let them make their own decisions about whether that master is the one for them or not. But the first step is to look and to pray inwardly to receive that guidance, because that power can guide us anywhere.
Sure.
And that power can lead us to the place where we're going to be guided anytime. We just need the sincerity, and we need to ask inside for it.
So there's no way that we can do this type of meditation on our own at all?
You can start on your own, but we need to get the assistance in order to do it correctly, and also to receive the protection inside that is also necessary, as well as the spiritual grace and upliftment that comes with connection with a being who has that power to help us. So it's just like anything, you know, in life. If you're really serious about any form of profession, whether it's a doctor, lawyer, pilot, you're going to want to study with the best. You don't want to go to a schlocky, you know, shyster lawyer to study with them. You want to get the best lawyer you can.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I learned a lot growing up reading Christian text, and you know, I have to say that you know he does say in there that we need no man to teach us, right? And maybe I took that verse wrong, you know. But he also says, woe to scribes and Pharisees, these people that are writing these books too, that are harbingers of hell. So, you know, it's which way do I go?
Well,
you know,
there's a lot of stuff that you have to take with a grain of salt, because it's written out of context, or you don't know the context, and you don't know who wrote it and when and so on and so forth. But what a real spiritual teacher is actually the Word made flesh. It is that power of God working through them. So they're not guiding you. The power of God is guiding you. So that's no human being who is doing it.
Sure.
It is the power of God working through a human form, but in fact, it's the power of God.
You know, there's a lot of major synchronicities here, and we've totally missed the break. Which that ought to tell you something. That's the first time I've ever done that. And I'm not going to take a break. I don't have to, you know. But, you know, I was talking to the astrologer. I don't know if you heard the show with Jeff Harmon. And he studied books under, I think his name was Daskalos or Strovolos.
Yes, Daskalos. I know him very well. I met him.
Did you? Yeah, that I was reading that too because he said, listen, you know, he was telling me about the Psalms verse and the banishments that I was doing and stuff to try to, I guess, get things away from me. But he said, look, just read this, start reading this book. They come to find out it's what they're saying is just what you're saying. It's all about this. We are in this constrained mode of consciousness that's like super, super constrained. Or what they call the nefesh, right? And we're trying to work our way out of it. Right. I mean, is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's precisely it. Precisely. And that's a great book to read, by the way. Daskalos' book, I'm familiar with them all, because he talks about the out-of-body experience and he talks about the light. So it's a great book. He's a genuine mystic and actually understands all of these issues.
Yeah, he talks about the etheric double and, you know.
Everything, yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole science is written out there very, very beautifully. I recommend it for people who are coming from Christian background.
Okay.
Because it gives them the esoteric Christian understanding of the scriptures.
Right. And you know, I hate to just keep pounding you with questions and questions, but this is a rare opportunity for me here.
My joy.
One of these, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I've been a seeker for a long time, and I've approached people like the Freemasons, Rosicrucians.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the only place I can ever talk to anybody where I live that even understands half of what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a danger there that we need to watch out for? Because you hear that all the time. You know, watch out for that stuff, you know.
Well, look, the problem is not stuff. The problem is the interpretation of the stuff and people's misunderstanding of things. That's why it comes back to getting a real teacher. And if you don't have a good teacher, you won't have the correct interpretation of anything anyway. So it depends on who you want to trust. You want to trust people who have no experience whatsoever, or do you want to trust someone who actually has inner experience? My spiritual teacher used to say the opinion of those people whose inner eye is not open is no opinion at all.
Okay.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Sure. Sure.
So what you want to do, again, back to the need for a living teacher who can guide us inwardly. And the experiences we have when we go inside confirm beyond a doubt, without a doubt whatsoever, the validity of our own spiritual truths. And so those truths, nobody in the world can take away from you. I don't care if a million, you know, philosophers and 10 million theologians tell you you're wrong, you'll look at them and say, sorry, you guys are wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, so, I can't prove it, but I know, right? That's what it's all about.
And you know, that experience, though, it's irrefutable. See, 99.9% of humanity are speaking at the level of intellect or what they've read from books. They have no personal knowledge. They don't have revelation. Without revelation, there's no faith, and there's no certainty, and there's no truth, because it can all be misinterpreted.
Yeah, it's funny you say revelation. I'm starting to slightly understand from an intellectual point of view what Revelations might be talking about. And I don't think that it's the end of the planet. I really don't.
Right.
I think it's the apocalypse of ourselves, you know.
Yes, I agree with that. That's another interpretation.
But these codes, I hate to hit you with intellectual stuff because I know you're a spiritualist, you know. But that's all what you're about. I really don't know, actually, because now I'm fascinated, I got to say. I mean, I'm in, right? So these codes, these numbers, this numerology, this geometry, these hidden things, are these real or are these another form of illusion?
There are sciences behind them. Astrology is a science, so is numerology, and so is palmistry. All of them, there are sciences, but there is an art and a science to it. If you are developed spiritually and you go inside, you can use the art and science and predict through astrology or some of these other sciences a lot of world events and personal understanding of individuals. But there are very few people who have that capacity. Most people are doing it for business and really don't understand the mystical part of it. Okay. But the bottom line is that if you go inside yourself, you're going to see all the truth for yourself. You don't need anybody else.
Right. There's no way you can explain it, I guess.
Any other source other than your own self.
So you started out under a Christian family, and it looks to me like the more I'm reading here in your biography, that you just kept moving east. East, and just kept going, didn't you?
My teacher found me, and I, as I said before, I took initiation from my teacher, Sankarpal Singh, but there has been three successors in our tradition, one who's currently living now, and someone I recommend people meet if they're sincerely seeking inner spiritual development. He travels the world all over. The reality is that truth is truth, whether it comes from the east or the west, the north or the south. it's even beyond religion. Religion is simply a school of thought that we have been born into or learned.
A doorway, maybe.
Yes, a doorway in order to take you to truth. But truth has no name. It has no label. It has no religion. You know, there's a story of one of my spiritual masters, someone who was living in India, came up to them at a time when there was a lot of antagonism between religions. And he said, "What religion do you belong to?" And he paused. His name was Baba Sawan Singh. And he said, "If you can tell me what religion God belongs to, that's the religion I belong to." And the reality is God has no religion.
Right.
We don't belong to religions. We belong to God. Religions are merely schools of thought we have entered in order to know that power called God. So we don't belong to religion.
It's a man-made thing,
isn't it? Power that has created us.
Right.
And when Jesus said, "Who are you?" He said, "You know, I and my Father are one." He didn't say, "I'm a Christian or a Jew."
Right.
He said, "I and my Father are one. I and that source are one. I and love are one." That's what he said. So when people ask me, "Am I a Christian?" I'm not a Christian. I belong to the source from which all of us came, as well as you.
The first time that I ever cried, I had like a spiritual moment, was when I read what you're talking about. And the verse where he says, you know, "I and my Father, he and me, I and him," and then he ended it with, "and I and you," right? Like, I kind of was like, what does that mean? And, you know, I have this little inner voice that says, keep reading it, right? Keep reading it, you know? And I and you to me meant that there's somebody, there's something inside me waiting, just waiting for me to hit that moment when I get there to teach me the rest of the way, you know? And, so when you see things in the Bible, like, and his number is 666 and all this other stuff, that's not a chip in our hand or anything like that, right?
I don't know. I don't know the context, but it was written. For me, I take most scripture, I do not take with that level of seriousness, because I don't know who wrote it, when they wrote it, or what their intention was.
Okay.
So let's just take a look at Jesus' quotes.
Mm-hmm.
There are about 3,000 Jesus scholars who studied for about 15 or 20 years to determine how much of Jesus' words were actually authentic. And they came up with 10% at best was even authenticated as historically authentic. So how much of tradition that we take as gospel truth is fabrication? We don't even know. So you have to be very careful when you look at ancient traditions.
Okay.
And there are, as I said before, there are very few traditions that are actually authenticated. And of the ones that are authenticated, then you need someone who can interpret those verses in a way that is appropriate to the context, the time, and the place, and what their intention was. And that's why, to do that, you need someone who had inner mystical attainment. No ordinary person can do that at the level of the intellect.
Well,
which all boils down to why we need a living guide, some living teacher to help us.
You're not alone in that thought. Every book, because I'm a big intellectual person, obviously you can tell, I'm always digging, right? And every book I've ever read that had a wise person, or that I felt was wise, has always said that. You know, there's the master, and then there's the disciple. There's no way around it, you know. So how do we... So what you say is, and this is for me too, and I know some of the people that are listening now, if we don't know who to go to, that if we ask and pray about it, and we're seeking, and it's time, it'll happen.
Yeah, exactly. That power knows our prayer. It's not far from us, and we will be guided, but we must be willing to look outwardly as well. So if you hear about a great teacher, you should go visit him. And it does not mean you should go there with full faith. You should go there as a researcher and check it all out. But there are some guidelines. So I recommend people go to whoever they can see to make the trip to travel, whether it's India or wherever you want to go to look. But to make sure that you are not deceived by holding up a very high standard. And that means, first of all, a teacher should be of the highest ethical standard. They should be walking, living the teaching, and should demonstrate that love and action that any great mystic or master has always demonstrated. They should also have the power to open the inner spiritual dimensions for the initiate or for the seeker. They should also be offering their teachings completely freely, as all masters have in the past. So all of these things are very important criteria. Jesus never charged at the door. Neither did Buddha, neither did any great teacher. So if there's money involved, something's wrong.
Okay.
So we should be looking for, these are just some general criteria to help us guide in our own search. But that inner cry, if the inner cry is there, God will find a way to guide us in the right place. And this phone conversation is itself a message for anyone who is listening, including yourself.
Yeah, I get that feeling. I get that feeling because out here, this is the whole reason why I made this show. The only people that I've been able to learn from are people that I've reached through on the internet, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the internet is, in my opinion, is a creation of God, just like all is. you know, a long time ago, there's no way I could be doing this with you, talking to you right now. Impossible, you know.
Exactly.
Pick up a phone, whatever, never heard of you. But I decided to make, honestly, I mean, you're right, I decided to make the show because I thought that the people that cared about Truth Seekers would want to be here and express what they know. I mean, just like you do.
You're doing a great service. And yes, indeed, it's not by happenstance that you connected with me and I connected with you. That is also by divine synchronicity and will.
Have you ever, and I don't know if you read this book, but I got to thinking when I went to a library one time that if God talked to all these people back then, did he talk to anybody now? Well, of course he did. And I was walking around the library, and I don't know if it's real or not, but it was a fascinating book when I found it. It was Conversations with God, right? The first one. And, you know, Neil Donald Walsh asked him in his book, he said, how do I know this isn't my imagination? How do I know I'm not talking to myself, you know? And he told him, he said, if it's your highest truth, your highest love, and your highest light, then it's from God. And he's like, and really, there's no difference. He said, but I'll tell you this. I can't tell you my truth until you stop telling the world yours. You know? And when he said that, that just, it was kind of like a tuning fork went off in me, you know? We're all the time going around telling everybody what we think our truth is. We don't ever stop to actually try to figure it out. Because if you can't explain to me what that black hole is out there in space, how am I supposed to say that you know everything about everything, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So how do we, do you have any big events coming up or speeches or anything going on now?
I'm going to be leading a big retreat in Virginia for 6 days.
Okay.
It's in Bowling. And of course it's open. You're welcome to come if you want.
You kind of broke up there on the city. What city was it in?
It's in Virginia.
It's in Virginia?
I don't know. That's got to be at least 10, 12 hours for you, maybe more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if somebody's out there that's listening, maybe they could swing by, you know.
Bowling Green, Virginia.
Bowling Green. Okay. And
yeah, with a big meditation center there. And about 100, 150 people come for a six-day retreat, serious meditation and workshops, and all great stuff.
And do you have your own website?
I have a website which was my leadership training program. It's still there, but I don't post anything on it anymore.
Okay.
I consult, but I do all my consulting for free. So people can connect with me there, and then I can send them information if they want. It's called leadershiptraining.com, leadershiptrainingprograms.com.
Okay.
But they can just email me to it, A Vidic Kirpal, AVIDICHKIRPAL. @gmail.com.
And your new book is called Love is a Secret, The Mystic Quest for Divine Love. That's on Amazon right now. That's the book
that you just wrote. All my contact information is there also.
And I don't want to give your book away, but there's so many gems in here, man. You believe... You know, there's something else I wanted to ask you, and I'm not trying to keep you up all night. I know it's late. Why this? You know, what is your opinion based on your experience? Why did we leave? Why did we come here? Was it just for the experience? Did we actually rebel?
You know, different traditions have said different things, but the one that resonates with me is something that comes from the Sufi tradition. And it is a hadith of the Prophet that says God was a hidden treasure and desired to be loved. And therefore he created man, human, And this hadith explains the mystery of that God was all one, but created separate souls for the purposes of experiencing a more profound love through separation. So souls that are separate from him alone come to understand the greatness of God's absolute perfect. And that can only be done if there is something separate from God. Otherwise, God can't know his own perfection except in a hypothetical way. It's latent, but it's not manifest. So that's one answer the Sufis give.
Okay.
That humans are created to develop a more perfect love. So I'll give you another take on it. God does not suffer. He has no evil. There is no negativity. It is pure positive love. The experience of compassion only arises through suffering and pain, separation. And the experience of the development of compassion can only occur in a human through separation and pain and going through these experiences. Having gone through that, love is made more perfect through compassion. Each of us, in our return back to the source, develops the unique, specially tailored compassion based on our own journey that God cannot have except through us.
So it's kind of like if there's one everything in all things, there's nothing to relate to, really, without
exactly
breaking yourself down into different consciousness experiences and characters and forgetfulness.
Exactly.
Which is awesome to think about. You know, a lot of people have said that, and a lot of people have, even famous people that have said that, somehow or another ended up getting shot, and I still haven't figured out why that is, why that happens, you know, or you know, beautiful messengers die from their own sufferings, you know, like Bill Hicks said that in his comedy, you know, and Robin Williams said that all the time, and John Lennon, you know, I mean, and anytime somebody wanted to really dig for truth, even if it was a president, they got taken out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I mean, it's like our own animal nature just doesn't want to know sometimes, I guess. I don't know, man.
There is that, that there is the experience when the soul is not in its ascendancy, the experience of separation causes this terrific pain and separation which results in violence. And that's the violence you see happening every single day all over the world.
So anytime we see somebody that's trying to hurt us, we really should be thinking where their pain is instead of why are they doing this to me?
Exactly, because we're doing it, everything results from one thing, and that is lack of love. The soul cannot live without love. Actually, they've done studies that babies born that are not hugged will die. The soul is so desperate for love that it will do anything for love. And if it does not receive love, it will be violent in one shape or another.
Whether it's internally or externally, right?
Internally first and then externally later, and that violence could be on others or it could be on oneself.
Okay. Well, I mean, this has been a fascinating discussion. I know we got to go, but man, I hope that you would you know, when you're, I know you're busy, right? But
you can, I'm happy to do another show anytime. I'm happy to stay in contact.
That's great.
You have my email. Drop me a line. Would love to connect with you again anytime.
Awesome. And I, yeah, that's, I really appreciate that.
Oh yeah, please, please.
I wanted to get something for you, so just hang out here for just a second. You guys can go catch his book. It's on Amazon. You can look it up. I mean, I did simply by typing in Andrew Vidict, or Vidic, that's V-I-D-I-C-H. The book is called Love is a Secret, The Mystic Quest for Divine Love. It's been a real pleasure having you here. I can't wait to have you back on again.
Please call me, and I'd love to stay in touch.
Awesome. All right, guys, that's it. Stay tuned next week. We got some surprise guests coming, okay?
Thanks
for stopping by.